Welcome to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP LP Fayette, brought to you by the Boonslick Historical Society and its president, respected Fayette community member Jim Steele, journalist, graphic designer, and historian. This edition of Local Voices airs every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. and focuses on a glance back at the music and history of World War II as it affected Fayette, America, and the world. Thank you again for tuning in to this special edition, A Glance Back, here on Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP.
Is music if it ain't possessing something sweet? And it ain't the music, there's something else that makes this tune complete. Yes, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. Well, don't mean a thing, all you got to do is sing. Makes no difference if it's sweet or hot. Just give that rhythm everything you've got. Yes, don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. It don't mean a thing, don't mean a thing if you ain't got that swing, boy. I said don't mean a thing, and all you got to do is sing like la 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 da la do 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 do. Nah, it makes no difference if it's sweet or hot. Just to give that rhythm everything you got. Oh, don't mean a thing, boy, if it ain't got a that a swinger. Take it, chummy. Thank you.
dollar billows to hang to spread. Fancy gloves, though, where's Mackie, dear? So there's not gonna trace of red on the sidewalk. On a Sunday morning, lights a party, who's in life? Someone sneaking round that corner. Tell me, could it be Mac the Knife on a tugboat down by the river, don't you know?
Bobby's there, me and you both singing the same song, they Jim. Bubble doo bubble bubble.
Enjoy the good old days when the world came together to fight for the good of all. This is Local Voices with historian Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Call me the top. me fall with a drop. And now I'm out on my own. But after thinking it over and over, I got what was coming to me. Just like the sting of a bee, you turn the tables on me.
Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then they suddenly appeared before me, the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, now I'm no longer alone. Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
Whisper, please adore me. And I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, now I'm no longer alone. Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
Are listening to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP. Now, our local historian Jim Steele will take us back to the age of World War II.
You're listening to KPIP's Local Voices, A Glance Back. I'm Jim Steele reporting. Well, from number 10 Downing Street to Fulton, Missouri, what would you do if you received a handwritten invitation from the President of the United States? Well, in late 1945, former Prime Minister of England Winston Churchill said yes. These words were those from well-known local historian Elizabeth Davis of Boonville, which were used during her newspaper column last week, noting the 75th anniversary of Winston Churchill's historic speech at Westminster College. Now, in that speech, he coined the term Iron Curtain, as most people know, to describe the emerging years after World War II, which came to be known as the Cold War. Well, last Friday, March the 5th, a number of virtual 75th anniversary events commemorating that historic speech took place on the college campus in Fulton. Now for a little bit of background. Victory in Europe had been celebrated in May of 1945. The war in Europe was over. Everyone went home. Everyone except the Russians, that is. Not only did they stay, they began fortifying their hold on Europe. Winston Churchill was a visionary and saw the political landscape for what it was. But that summer of 1945, during Britain's general election, he and his party were voted out of office. Churchill no longer had the ears of Parliament. No one would listen to him. Feeling depressed and helpless, he spent his time writing and accepting invitations to speak. However, he needed a larger and more influential audience. Meanwhile, in a small Midwestern town, in which some would describe the middle of nowhere USA, Westminster College president Dr. Frank McClure was trying to come up with a speaker for a foundation lecture to be given in 1946. Now, this annual event is known as the Green Lecture Series, and it continues to this day. As President McClure, in the fall of 1945, pondered finding a prominent speaker for the event, Winston Churchill's name came up. Now, without much hope, an invitation dated October 3rd, 1945, was sent to Churchill through Major General Harry Vaughan, a Westminster graduate and military advisor to President Truman. Vaughan then passed it on to his boss. On the lower left-hand corner of the formal typewritten letter inviting Churchill to speak at Westminster on international affairs, there was a handwritten note from the president saying, "This is a wonderful school. It's in my home state. Hope you can do it. I'll introduce you. Best regards, Harry Truman." So, on March the 5th, 1946, Churchill gave his famous speech, officially titled The Sinews of Peace, at the college, a speech that changed the course of 20th century history. Russian newspapers termed Churchill's speech, of course they didn't like it, known today as the Iron Curtain speech, as the beginning of the Cold War. 75 years ago, Truman was fully aware of Churchill's message. The president was determined that the college venue, right here in Missouri, would provide him with a forum. So on March the 4th, 1946, 2 days before the speech, the president and his guests boarded a specially designated Baltimore and Ohio train and left Washington for the overnight 1,000-mile trip to central Missouri. They were accompanied by the president's advisors, as well as some 60 journalists and photographers. Truman and Churchill, both avid poker players, passed the time at cards. After switching to the Katy Line in St. Louis, that was the next morning, the party detrained in Jefferson City and drove the last 24 miles to Fulton. Huge crowds swarmed the city streets as the motorcade passed through, with Truman and Churchill waving and smiling from atop the back seat of the presidential limousine known as the Sunshine Special. After lunch, the presidential party proceeded to the college gym, where Churchill was presented with an honorary degree. It was here that the speech was scheduled to be delivered, and predictably the audience was huge. According to the New York Times, 8,000 Fulton residents attended, while some 20,000 others traveled distances to hear it, some as far as from St. Louis. Good to his word, Truman made the introduction. After a brief, lighthearted reference to the two Westminsters, Churchill began his speech by reminding Americans, their recent wartime allies, of their responsibility to provide aid to the millions of refugees in Europe and Asia whom the war had left homeless and destitute. But he soon launched into the point of his speech with a phrase that's since been quoted innumerable times, from Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent. Behind that line lay all the capitals of the ancient states of Central and Eastern Europe. He proceeded to name them one by one, then went on to present the chilling two-point theme. The Soviet Union, he said, must not be allowed to continue its expansion into Europe and elsewhere, and only the two countries in a position to stop Stalin were Britain and the United States. Churchill listed all the global trouble spots in which Russia was imposing its interests adding, "Nobody knows what Soviet Russia and its Communist International Organization intend to do in the future, or what are the limits, if any, to their expansive and proselytizing tendencies. We should be most unwise," he said, "not to face them squarely while the time remains." Reaction to the speech was swift and, for the most part, negative. Not surprisingly, Russia weighed in 2 days later with a furious Stalin, accusing Churchill of fomenting a hawkish attitude toward the Soviet Union. And while there were those who were willing to accept Churchill's dire predictions as an accurate portrayal of the current global political situation, there were others who viewed him as an overly dramatic alarmist. Politicians and newspaper editorials accused Churchill of unleashing panic at best and warmongering at worst. As you might know, 4 years of war had left Americans exhausted, and to many, the threat of a confrontation with Russia was unthinkable. Less than a year after fighting alongside the Russians against a common fascist foe, some still considered the Soviet Union our friend and refused to believe that Stalin was creating what would amount to a global schism. President Truman himself refrained initially from openly endorsing Churchill's position, adopting a position of neutrality, and claiming he had no idea what the former prime minister was planning to say. Well, this was patently untrue, given what was discussed at a meeting at which he and Secretary of State Jimmy Burns had reviewed Churchill's talking points. The former prime minister had recognized early that his country's recent wartime ally had ideological goals that were at odds with the West. In advance of the event, Truman was in an awkward position, however, and at the time, supporting Churchill's stance would automatically send a negative signal to Stalin. But by March 1946, Truman had occupied the White House for less than a year, after only a brief stint as the vice president. He was still finding his way on the international stage, and what was now confronted needed, indeed, what Churchill had essentially forced him to confront, was a daunting challenge, and probably the most daunting challenge he'd ever face. The attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki less than a year before had clearly demonstrated that the waging of war will never again be the same, and the prospect of a nuclear conflict with the world's other superpower was inconceivable. So over time, Truman adopted Churchill's position. Historian James Muller noted that he, quote, sort of let it percolate for a while and eventually came around publicly to agreeing with him. From Truman's point of view, the speech was important because the geopolitical situation had changed so much with the defeat of Nazi Germany and then the new threat from the Soviet Union. It was somewhat easier to have Churchill, the great English-speaking ally of the United States from the war, to come and warn about the danger from the Soviet Union and from communism than for Truman to do it himself. Churchill's speech in Fulton, the first of several he'd given in America before returning to London by month's end, was arguably one of the most important to be delivered in modern times. Ultimately, the undeniable force and logic of his message made his conclusions impossible to refute. Once the initial shock of Churchill's message had abated, Americans would come to see that the speech in Fulton was a clear road sign warning of the political upheaval to come. It would not be long before his predictions became a reality, and the phrase Iron Curtain became part of the global vocabulary, although officially the speech was titled Sinews of Peace, but has come down, of course, through the decades to be known as the Iron Curtain Speech, although some political pundits refer to it as the speech that started the Cold War, depending on your point of view. Whatever one chooses to call it, Churchill's message was clear and accurate, forecasting what would prove best to be the freezing of relations between the Soviet Union and the non-communist West, and at worst, a decades-long period in which the shadow of nuclear war loomed over the world. It all happened March 5th, 1946, at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri, where KPIP Local Voices, A Glance Back. This is Jim Steele reporting.
That was our Glance Back in Time with Jim Steele, president of the Boone Slick Historical Society. This series with Jim Steele will continue every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. during Local Voices, only on 94.7 KPIP. Thank you.
becomes you. It goes with your hair. You certainly know the right thing to wear. Moonlight becomes you. I'm thrilled at the sight, and I could get so romantic tonight. You're all dressed up to go dreaming. Now don't tell me I'm wrong. What a night to go dreaming. Mind if I tag along? If I say I love you, I want you to know it's not just because there's moonlight, although moonlight becomes you so. To go dreaming. Now don't tell me I'm wrong. What a night to go dreaming. Mind if I tag along? If I say I love you, I want you to know it's not just because there's moonlight, although moonlight becomes you so.
Why do you whisper green grass? Why tell the trees what ain't so? Whispering grass, the trees don't have to know. No, no. Why tell them all your secrets? Who kissed there long ago? Whispering grass, the trees don't need to know. Don't you tell it to the breeze, 'cause she will tell the birds and bees, and everyone will know, because you told the blabbering trees. Yes, you told them once before. It's no secret anymore. Why tell them all the old things? They're buried under the snow. Whispering grass, don't tell the trees, 'cause the trees don't need to know.
Now don't you tell it to the breeze, 'cause she'll run and tell it to the birds and bees, and everyone'll know, because you done told the blabbering trees. Yes, you did. You told them once before. So that's why it ain't no secret anymore.
Why tell them all the old things? They're buried under the snow. whispering grass, don't tell the trees, 'cause the trees don't need to know.
The Jergens Program with Walter Winchell, America's one-man newspaper. Walter Winchell's famous column appears in the New York Daily Mirror and other newspapers from New York to Honolulu. He's here with flash news, odd news, exclusive news. We have a Thanksgiving treat for you tonight. Miss Alma Archer is here in our Jergens studio and will speak to you later. Alma Archer is an expert on smartness and beauty, and she believes that the care of her hands is a duty for every woman. And now to the editorial room of the Jergens Journal and Walter Winchell.
Good evening, Mr. and Mr. North American. All the ships at sea. Let's go to press. Flash! Juarez, Mexico. Steady Lawford, who takes a bath before... And that, ladies and gentlemen, winds up another Jergens Journal until next Sunday night at the very same time. Until then, and with lotions of love, I remain your New York correspondent, Walter Winchell, who thinks every American has at least one thing to be thankful for on Thursday next. Thankful that we still salute a flag and not a shirt. Good night.
Thanks, Frank. That was swell.
I'm glad you liked it, Harry.
You know, you're a darn good-looking fellow. I'll bet you have lots of girls crazy about you.
Oh, I don't know.
You're just being modest. But tell me, how do you feel when you're in love?
How do I feel? My gosh, Harry, it's the most wonderful feeling in the world. Why, when I'm in love, I'm just breezing along with the breeze. I never mind the bumps or the ruts along the highway of life. I float through life on a cloud.
And that, folks, is exactly the way you feel in the famous Dodge Air Glide ride. If you haven't experienced this thrill, visit the showroom of your local Dodge dealer. See for yourself the extra value you get in this big, new, money-saving Dodge. Believe me, folks, it certainly is more car for less money. Think of it. The new Dodge Beauty Winner of 1936 now sells for only $640 and up. This price is at Factory Detroit.
Say, that is something, Harry. But how about you singing a song now?
Don't mind if I do.
Thanks to the Boonslick Historical Society for bringing us this historical content on Local Voices with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Oh,
now it's time to take a look back at the events that shaped this country and the world with This Week in History on KPIP's A Glance Back. In 1930, President Howard Taft became the first U.S. president to be buried in the National Cemetery in Arlington. Also in 1930, Gandhi began his March to the Sea to symbolize his defiance of British rule in India. In 1933, President Paul von Hindenburg drops the flag of the German Republic and orders that the swastika and the Empire banner be flown side by side. Also in 1933, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, also known as FDR, makes his first of his Sunday evening fireside chats. In 1933, Nevada becomes the first U.S. state to regulate drugs. In 1935, the German Air Force becomes an official organ of the Reich. In 1935, a 3,000-year-old archive is found in Jerusalem, confirming biblical history. In 1936, the German press warns that all Jews who vote in the upcoming elections will be arrested. In 1938, German troops enter Austria without firing a shot, forming the Union of Austria and Germany. In 1939, Pius XII is elected as the new pope in Rome. In 1940, Finland capitulates conditionally to Soviet terms, but maintains its independence. In 1941, Hitler issues an edict calling for an invasion of the Soviet Union. Also in 1941, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt authorizes the Lend-Lease Act, which authorizes the act of giving war supplies to allies. In 1941, martial law is proclaimed in Holland to extinguish any anti-Nazi protests. Also in 1941, Vichy France threatens to use its navy unless Britain allows food to reach France. In 1942, Julian Fliege of the Nurse Corps becomes the first woman colonel in the U.S. Army. In 1943, Adolf Hitler calls Field Marshal Erwin Rommel back from Tunisia in North Africa. In 1945, Phyllis Mae Daly receives a commission in the U.S. Navy Nurse Corps. She will become the first African-American nurse to serve in World War II. Also in 1945, diarist Anne Frank dies in a German concentration camp. Also in 1945, American B-29 bombers attack Tokyo, killing 100,000 people. In 1946, Winston Churchill travels to our own Fulton, Missouri, with President Truman to give what has been known as the Iron Curtain speech at Westminster College. In 1947, the Big Four meet in Moscow to discuss the future of Germany. In 1948, the U.S. Supreme Court rules that religious instruction in public schools is unconstitutional. And in 1948, author Zelda Fitzgerald, the wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald, dies in a fire at Highland Hospital. Tune in next week for another look back at the events that shaped this country and the world with This Week in History on KPIP's A Glance Back.
Never treats me sweet and gentle the way he should. I got it bad, and that ain't good. My poor heart is sentimental, not made of wood. I got it bad, and that ain't good. But when the week is over, and me. the way she is. Oh, I've got it bad, and that ain't thank you.
Thanks to the Boonslick Historical Society for bringing us this historical content on Local Voices with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Garden walls and the stars begin to flicker in the sky. Through the mist of a memory, you wander back to me, breathing my name with a sigh. In the still of the night, once again I hold you tight. Though you're gone, your love lives on when moonlight beams. And as long as my heart will beat, lover will always meet here in my deep purple.
The dreams you've dreamed will all come
smile and carry on. There must be a darkest hour before the dawn. The world will sing again, a song of spring again. For there'll be happiness around the bend for you. And then the dreams you've dreamed will all come true.
Taking a glance back at history with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Hello, Yankee Brothers. This is your Japanese sister, the voice of truth.
Tokyo Rose
reaches out to you from the peacefulness of Japan, laden as always with love, but today also with sorrow because of what your superiors are making you do. This morning they are forcing you to attempt the impossible.
Is that Tokyo Rose?
Brothers?
Yeah, I guess so.
The impossible.
And no accent.
For it is impossible for you to dislodge our forces on Iwo Jima.
Iwo Jima?
She's
got the straight dope.
I am filled with sadness for you because of the thousands of Japanese soldiers safe in caves and pillboxes your bombs and shells can't touch, reluctantly waiting to slaughter you. They do not want to harm you, because they know that what you are attempting to do this morning is not of your own choice. They know, as I know and you know, that you are making this futile sacrifice for people who sit snug and secure 11,000 miles away, who have never seen a grenade burst in an American stomach or an American arm blown from an American shoulder. Of people who are not interested in the headlines you try to make, who make their own headlines. Listen, Yankee Brothers, to these headlines. 5,000 donors desert blood bank as Eisenhower sweeps into Rhineland. Ban on horse racing leaves public heavy with war coin. No place to spend it. Strike continues in critical war industry. 3-year buying spree cleans retail shelves as public clamors for more merchandise. Workers claim nightclub curfew limits amusement spending. Does that sound like a people who want war? Who are supporting you and your sacrificial attempts to carry on this useless war? Think it over, Yankee brother. They do not want war. They are doing their best to let you know they are not behind you in this war. This is the voice of truth. I will be with you again tomorrow, those of you who are left to listen. But this morning, my heart is heavy.
Put on your red, white, and blue.
All the nice girls love a sailor. There'll be a sailor for you, because the fleet's in port again, back home, in port again. Yo-ho, now we'll have a jolly good, really wonderful, mighty marvelous time.